Welcome to Being Mom, a podcast about modern motherhood. I'm your host, Ali Kozel. This is where we have honest conversations about the mind-blowing transition to motherhood, nurturing our families, and the beautiful roller coaster ride of being a mom. I'm so glad you're here. Hello, and welcome back to the show. If you are a regular Being Mom listener, then you may have noticed that the release day for the show has changed. I am slowing down the production schedule, so you can now expect a new episode every other week on Wednesdays instead of the original weekly Tuesday release. So if you're already subscribed, then you're all set. And if you're not, then I invite you to become a subscriber right now so that you never miss an episode. And you can do that wherever you listen to podcasts. So now that I have that little update out of the way, I am so happy to share my conversation with this week's guest, Erin Pace. Erin lives in New York City with her family, which includes her husband, Brian, and their two-year-old son, Aiden. Erin and I have known each other for a good number of years through our shared love of working somatically with women. Erin is a sensual dance teacher, a spiritual realignment guide, body reader, love leader, and an all-around life-nurturing soul coach. Knowing Erin, she has a warm presence and a keen sense of awareness. And later in the show, Erin talks about her faith and explains what she means by spiritual alignment. But first, we talked about her experience of becoming a mother. Erin's path to motherhood was an 8-year journey of trust, heart, devotion, and courage. She and her husband were married later in life, and they spent the first 2 years focused on enjoying their partnership, as one does. And when they didn't become pregnant during that time, they began a journey of exploring options for enhancing fertility. First, they tried multiple IUIs or intrauterine insemination. And when that wasn't successful, they began the process of IVF or in vitro fertilization. So after 3 rounds of IVF, which did not result in pregnancy, you can imagine the toll that this was taking on Erin and her husband, both physically and emotionally. So partway through their fourth attempt with IVF, and when something just didn't feel quite right for Erin, they decided together to take a pause. Something I found to be incredible while I was listening to Erin's story was the strong partnership that she and her husband were able to maintain throughout their journey to parenthood. So I asked her about this, and she shared what kept them so intimately connected. So here she is, introducing Erin. You know, during this time, may I ask, like, how that affected your partnership and your relationship? How did you guys, because my perception is that you actually did remain quite close and connected. How did that come about? How did you maintain that for yourselves?
That's a beautiful question. I think the way we did it is because we really have deep respect for one another, and we really do have unconditional love. And my husband was so with me every step of the way, and like, we don't need to do this, we don't need to do that, you know, or do we need, you know, and I was really, really committed to the self inquiry, the why are we doing, you know, really tuning into that sovereign self alignment and inquiry of, is this in our path? Like, is this something we are meant to do? Because I did not want to force it upon us, nor did my husband. We were very clear on the fact that we were aging, we were older, we would be older parents. And with that, not only comes the responsibility of you are older parents and that will be difficult, more challenging physically, but there's a responsibility to hopefully stay alive while they grow.
Right.
We want to stay in good health and be alive for his livelihood and all that. So anyway, we were very aware that there were there was a lot of responsibility that came with this decision. And it wasn't merely a, oh my God, of course we're going to be parents. And yes, we're doing this. It was at every step of the way, a request of ourselves around the question of, is this truly what we're meant to do? So we kept coming back to, yes, apparently we're supposed to parent together. And there's a soul coming, like there's someone coming. We just don't know how. We didn't know when and how. And so we stayed committed, but we didn't push or over push. We really felt everything along the way. So when I felt devastated with my body or angry at my body or sad or like I had to mourn the loss of embryos, and I was in a state of mourning at every stage of that process with each round of IVF, I would honor the time that was required to process and feel through those emotions and move those emotions through my body and connect with Brian on each of those so that he knew where I was in relationship with my body, and he respected that fully, and our intimacy and our bond was able to experience different types of intimacy and connection, right? Different types of connection.
I mean, intimacy, so I like, just mean connection and, you know, togetherness.
Yeah. Like, so our, sometimes it was more about just being next to each other and touching each other constantly, you know, just to feel each other's presence. Sometimes the intimate connection was one where we were just connecting through sadness, you know, and it was incredible because it was the truth.
Yes. I mean, what sounds beautiful, what I hear you saying is that there was a way in which neither of you were withholding the experience from the other. So you really shared in the experience of hope and then loss and all of it. And my gosh, to go through that three times or more is pretty remarkable that you were able to keep that bond and that partnership intact.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Ellie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we keep growing deeper toward each other and to each other. Mm-hmm. And we were able to maintain that. Yeah. Another way I like to look at it is, you know, choosing to be a parent for us was one of the hardest choices to make because of the amount of commitment and responsibility that comes along with it. Whereas choosing to get married was a no-brainer. It was like, absolutely, I'm going to be spending the rest of my life with you. Like, that makes complete sense to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was something so unknown in the childhood, the parenthood journey around choosing to be a parent, you know, we don't know what that is because he's not here yet or she's not here yet. You know, so we don't know what we're saying yes to.
Yes.
And committing all of the time and the energy and the financial, you know, all the stuff you're committing to that choice is very unknown.
I mean, what you're talking about is a real consciousness around it, you know, because there are births that are very conscious and births that aren't as conscious. Neither one is better than the other. It's just different.
Exactly.
And so just to, you know, move forward with, you know, so you've had these rounds of IVF, you know that there's this soul waiting to come to you. How did he, who is now Aiden, make his way to you?
Well, he eventually, the way was through surrogacy. So we went through a phase of quiet, which was a pause. A great pause. And then that is also when we lost Brian's mother. So there was a period of time there of some loss and recalibration. Then we looked into adoption because Brian was adopted. And so we thought it would be a lovely way to pay it forward in a sense and have that experience for him in that way. However, every door that we looked into or pursued just was a closed door. Like it just wasn't leading toward the right path. And we felt that very much so. So we then looked into surrogacy.
Did someone suggest that to you? Like, where did that idea come from?
I have known some friends who are actually gay couples who have used surrogates.
Right, and of course, inevitably, that makes sense.
Right. And so I then found out that a dear heterosexual couple friend of ours had used a surrogate as well. And I just started researching and talking to people. And the wonderful thing about this world of IVF and surrogacy and that world is there is an underworld of people who want to help people, because I ended up talking to strangers I'd never met. There were friends of friends who to talk about certain doctors or practices or, you know, ways that worked for them. And in so doing, I learned of different agencies for surrogacy, and we were about to sign with a surrogate agency. And I just reached out to my friend who him and his partner had used a surrogate. And I just said, hey, by any chance, would she know of someone? And he said, give me a few days. And within a few days, he got back to me and said, she does. And that path like completely became illuminated and just generated every yes. It was, we spoke to the woman and it felt like a yes. We spoke to the potential surrogate and it was like, oh yes. And then we met her and we thought, oh gosh, this is definitely the road we're supposed to take.
So it's like you were really listening to where the signs were pointing. Like those are no's and these are yeses. And so we're going to walk through those open doors rather than trying to bang on the closed doors. That's so spiritually evolved of you.
Yeah, we were definitely following the soul, yes, and feeling into, okay, this is definitely opening up to us, and what does that mean? And then you open up into a whole new world of research, right? So there's a lot to be said about the world of surrogacy and what that is and how to go about finding one and how to handle all of the contractual agreements that go along with that. And again, the financial
because I was sitting here thinking like, oh, that's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful gift. And it is, that's true. And then you bring up like, oh, right. It's also a legal matter. You know, it's like both. That's so illuminating. Yeah.
And meanwhile, you know, you have the frozen embryos sitting there. Mm-hmm. So you're like, this baby is frozen. It's all very crazy.
Yeah. But you know, it's like, you think about your child's soul, and what I can feel is that something about his journey makes him so strong, like a soul that chooses this unique and special path. Like I'm like, it feels, makes me feel emotional thinking about it. Like that's so magical.
It is. And he is magical. He came in with the magic. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So tell me about his birth. Tell me about what that experience is like for you as his mom.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So he came a few days early. We were expecting him. I can't remember. It was on a week where he was due on like a Wednesday or Thursday. And we got the call Sunday morning. And we were based in New York. And she, our surrogate, was up in Massachusetts. So for us, it's just luckily a drive. And when we realized this was at like, I think 4:30 or 5 in the morning, and we realized, oh no, this really is happening. We actually have to get in the car today.
Right now.
And unusually, we were both sick that day. So we were not feeling good at all and grabbing all the things and getting a rental car and, you know, because we don't own a car.
Right.
Like figure out some things and come into the realization that, oh, this is happening. And so we had discussed the birth plan with her. However, it wasn't confirmed that she would do a water birth. And so on our drive to Massachusetts, her husband was saying she's in the water. And we got nervous because, we weren't, there are definitely some complications that can happen from water births. And she herself had never had a water birth. She had had two regular births outside of the water. And you know what I mean? So, so we were kind of feeling a little nervousness around, will that be safe? And we just had to, like, everything along this journey with the surrogacy part, especially, was surrender. Like, we were not micromanaging her on her journey. Mm-hmm. We were in complete trust and faith and surrender. And so that was happening to us again on this drive up there. And it all became so magical because it was this little birthing center. And we show up and it's so peaceful. I mean, it was so quiet when we got there. And they brought us into the room and it was dark and she was listening to that song, Orange Sky.
By Alexi Murdoch.
Yes. And her husband, she was leaning forward in the water and her husband was like stroking her back and holding a cold compress on her neck. And the midwife was there and everyone was so calm and it was the most beautiful thing. And we arrived a half hour before he showed up.
Oh my gosh.
We had this little bit of time with them to kind of land ourselves into this moment and become super present in this space. And then she had very few pushes before he came and she sort of changed positions a few times, gave a few grunts, and they were like giving me a glove and saying, go, you can touch his head. Can you see his head? I was like, what? Like, so, you know, they had me reach in and I sort of felt him and witnessed, saw him coming out of the canal. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. And they lifted him up and out and they wanted to give him straight to me. However, it felt right to me that she would have a moment with him, having carried him. So I let her have that moment. And then they let me have a moment and Brian have a moment and they cleaned him off. And it was the most magnificent, beautiful thing I'd ever witnessed, honestly.
Wow.
Yeah.
That just felt so moving to hear. And it's so beautiful that you had the capacity in that moment to feel that there needed to be a connection between his vessel, like his birth vessel, and him, you know, so that, because really it is true, right? I mean, that all three of you created the possibility of his aliveness in this capacity.
Oh, that's so beautifully said, Allie. Yeah. And our surrogate was funny. Our surrogate was very funny. There was a game on that she wanted to watch with her
husband. Oh.
So
within, like a sports game?
Yeah. And within minutes, she's like, hey, can you turn the game on? So she's in the bed watching the game with her husband while we're cuddling Aiden. It's just so funny. She's very sweet.
I mean, wow.
Wow, right?
I don't know that I could do that. I'm just going to be really honest with you.
I know.
I mean, God bless those who do.
Exactly. Like, exactly. I mean, she obviously had served greatness in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know the profound, like the profundity. Is that the word?
Like, profundity.
Yeah. When that landed for her.
Mm-hmm. Because this was the first time she was a surrogate.
Yes. And I think it will be the only time she had the one experience. And it, you know, demands a lot on a family. She has two children of her own and a loving husband. And I love how truthful they were with us throughout the process about their own concerns and his fears. And all, it was all very open. And we really stood back and let them have their experience while we were having our experience. And yeah.
That's amazing.
I actually think something that brought me back to what you were asking before about what kept Brian and I connected through all of that IVF stuff. It's also just me understanding that he has his own experience with his loss and his journey, you know, all of that as well. I guess you touched on that, but.
No, I mean, I like that you brought that up because I think, I mean, I'll just be really honest with you and say that, you know, my transition to motherhood, you know, had its difficulties, mostly on an emotional, from a mental health point of view. And something that I didn't have the capacity for, which I think, you know, really led to some of the challenges that my partner and I had after becoming parents, was that I didn't allow space for his experience. Mm-hmm. I was so all consumed with my experience that I wasn't totally aware of like all the things that he was also going through. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's tremendously wonderful, number one, that you did have that capacity, and just, you know, for anybody listening, don't forget about your partner.
Yeah.
You know, in their experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So here he is. You've brought him home. What was your transition like into motherhood?
I think it's still happening.
Oh, okay. Truer words have never been spoken. My child is 8 and I feel like I'm still transitioning. Right. I'm sorry to tell you that, but
it's so true. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, having not carried him, for me, there was definitely that concern about the bonding, right? How are we going to bond? And there are a lot of pressures for mothers, for fathers too, for, again, going back to the partner. So, but for the mother, if I'm not giving the colostrum and if I'm not breastfeeding and I'm not doing skin to skin every day, you know, there are so many perspectives, and I had to keep, again, much like the practice through IVF and that whole journey, to go back and really, really rely on my self-awareness and my sovereign self to understand that my way is okay. My way is okay. And he is a healthy child, and we will bond in our way, in our time, and it will be of the divine, like it is that. And so, and it will continue through his whole life. It's not just in these early moments and early months. So for the first part, we stayed in Massachusetts for a week, and we did gather some colostrum from her, but she did not wish to continue breastfeeding. So we didn't do the shipping of the milk, which many people do this situation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that you can freeze it and ship it, and it would be a huge ask of her. And we didn't feel comfortable asking it, and she didn't feel comfortable doing it. And that was very clear. And so we just moved on and went on to formula. I was a formula baby. Yeah. So it was, you know, like I'm perfectly healthy, thank God. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
So we moved to formula. And we came back to New York, and I began teaching nearly right away and went back to my other
teaching job. Movement classes. Just
correct.
So,
thank you. Yeah. And, went back to my regular other job that I have, after the 2 months. And so we had,
so you had a 2 month maternity leave.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that was a generous time to feel connected with him and yet be able to get out to feel like I'm still part of my life, right? So I still was able to be in that space of movement and embodiment and sensual practice, but still come home and be with him for longer periods of time. So anyway, it was really I guess a time of slow bonding, where we would just all the usual normal newborn stuff. I don't really know what to say to that part of time.
No, I mean, look, I imagine that, sure, you didn't carry him physically in your body, but you were clearly carrying him in your heart for a long period of time.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, just because you don't go through the physical labor of birth, that time is still, I imagine, quite wild.
Yeah.
Did you have, you know, the experience of like not sleeping and all of that stuff? That's
I
the
did.
Same.
I did. And there were a number of things where I was, my body was mirroring. I actually was quite bloated and I wasn't eating things that were bloating food, you know? So there were little things that were happening in my body that I do think were mirroring in some sense, her experience. And I believe in that stuff. So actually when it was happening, I thought, oh God, well, you know, that's happening and that's interesting. And okay, wow. So yeah, absolutely. The way you said that is so perfect, that my heart was on that journey with him the whole time. And so it was the normal newborn, not normal. Is there any normal? There's no normal.
Like, it's different. Everything for is normal. Like I've decided that just anything that happens is probably normal. I mean, unless it's, you know, medical, but
some version of normal. So, just dealing with the schedule and the feedings and the sleep, the no sleep and the, whatever, luckily he wasn't colicky. So we didn't have to deal with that. Thank goodness. But you know, he had other things. He has eczema. Little things would come up. And so I transitioned slowly back to work. And there is some also a little bit of guilt around that. Like, am I giving enough to him? You know, I struggled there a bit here and there with making sure I'm enough of a presence in his life. You know, when you leave him with someone else and you don't know what's going on throughout his day, that's hard.
It is,
and it's hard for the father too. So definitely we've had, you know, to feel into that some, and as we transition, and we've moved him into daycare now, so he is at school. That transition was a fucking nightmare, I'll tell you.
No. It was horrible. Was there separation anxiety?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The school was like, you will have 1 week and this will happen, an hour here, 2 hours there, 3 hours there. And no, it was a 2 month hellish transition. But, you know, I've heard some people it can go on for many months. And luckily, this went on for about 2 months. And now he has truly kind of settled into it and really enjoys it for the most part. So,
good.
We're on that.
Yeah. It's a lot. You know, there's so much, it's interesting actually, cause you said like, oh, you know, the dad has the guilt too. And there's so much talk of mom guilt. Like it's such a, we all carry it in some capacity, but there's not a lot talked about like the dad guilt. And so it's interesting to hear you say that Brian, you know, had that same sort of like, oh, I shouldn't leave. Do you think that that was on some level more so because he was wished for so hard?
Yes, I do think it's exaggerated a bit for us. There's almost, with the responsibility of the choice comes also that, well, you chose this. Are you not going to be home every day for it? You know, like,
right.
And recognizing that that's self-imposed.
Yes.
Right. Like that doesn't, it's all perspective. So I have to constantly check in on my perspective. Part of that is in the parenting exercise, the exercise of parenting. And part of that is in the self-judgment and self-criticism.
Yeah. There's like, you know, it's almost like a reminder, like, yes, he was wanted. I mean, me too. Like my child was very wanted, planned, the whole thing. And I have to remind myself that that can be true. And at the same time, I can need a break.
Exactly. Like,
or I can complain about the this, that, or the other thing, and it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Right.
Because we're human and he's on his soul journey and he chose us and we chose him and 100%. All the things.
Right? Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Was there anything that came as a surprise for you as a mom so far? Maybe numerous things.
You know, I think because we were so, in a sense, as prepared as you can be because of our age. You know, we were 49 when he was born, right? So there was a lot of preparation in those 8 years mentally. And this, I think something that surprised me was the relationship with time. You can think in your mind about, well, you know, will be 70 when he's 20. You can think that through. But once the little being is actually in your arms and you're witnessing these most beautiful moments, like every moment is a cherishable moment, even when he's crying. If you can see it that way.
Yeah.
And you think, oh my God, like it, 20 years, like that's a long time. Like we're really, it's that old saying of like, long days, short years, like it's going to mm-hmm. fly by. And yet some days are really long and you're like, wow, like he's just beginning.
Right.
And we are entering a phase in our lives that's, you know, you crossed over that sort of midlife piece. Oh, you're looking down a different, with a different lens. Right. So it's just a really fascinating experience to have that relationship with time. And I don't know if I'm describing it very articulately, but what else surprises me? I don't feel super surprised by much. I think it's more just how present you think you can be so present. And I work on presence. I teach presence. Mm-hmm. There's something about children that it just takes it to a whole new level, right? Yes. Oh, and there also is this requirement of efficiency that's different. Like I'm a very efficient person, very organized. Uh-huh. My masculine comes out in that organized, okay, I have this much time in my day and I can get a lot done in a day, right? And so when you add a child into the equation, what did surprise me is, oh, it's going to take 20 minutes to get him to put his jacket on. 20 minutes. Okay. How does that affect everything?
Yes.
So like now I'm finding myself padding some time where it's needed to really allow him the time he needs to put on his shoes and have a little tantrum or, you know, run across and play. He likes to play and hide and run and run and run and make sure I'm following him. So he'll do that for 5 minutes until he finally is like, okay, I'll put my jacket on. One sleeve.
Yeah. Right. They just have no concept. I mean, time is just not a construct that they are existing in at all. It's such an externally imposed thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My child's, he can tell time like on a watch, but the concept of time and how it passes has
still
not been picked
at eight
up yet.
Isn't it funny? Yeah.
Not really. I mean, I think he may be unique in that. I don't know, but no.
Yeah.
He has no idea. Like 5 minutes, 15 minutes, he doesn't know.
Right.
That means.
Yeah.
Were there other ways in which, you know, becoming a mom shifted your lifestyle? I mean, you talked about, you know, having to kind of pad more time and
condense
all
and
that.
Say no to certain invitations that your heart is like, oh God, I really, and you know, that's coming with parenthood, right? You like,
right.
I knew that would come with parenthood and choosing the family first has been really important, really important.
Yeah.
And so that has been a beautiful shift, not a bad shift. And definitely carving out time for self-care has been more difficult. It has posed challenging for me personally.
How have you found yourself being successful at that?
I have found through my many practices and through what I teach that little nuggets of time as opposed to 2 hours to go take this class, right? I cannot gift that to myself as often. Mm-hmm. What I can do is take 5 minutes to breathe deeply down into my body and feel where I'm stuck and stretch my body and open up into my curves and move what is stuck with my presence and be very, very self-reflective. And it's like an all-day caring practice, right? Where every 10 minutes or every hour, I'm just doing a check-in on my breath, on my tightness, on my anything that's restricting itself or resisting. Or if I feel an emotion coming up, what is that? What is that gifting me? What information is that trying to offer me? my mantra in life is to grow and serve. So I kind of look at things as, how is this growing me in the moment? If there is something emotionally triggering going on. So really trying to stay very present and allow a lot of little moments to connect to my mind and my body with care.
I like that idea of making it an all-day practice. There's something really yummy about that for me. Because I have found that, you know, me too, since transitioning into motherhood, being able to go take an hour and a half, 2 hour, you know, group fitness or yoga or, you know, feminine movement class really is a luxury that I can't afford.
Right.
Not, you know, in many ways. And so for me, the way that I found it was to carve out as often as possible, you know, like set a goal. And if I reach it, great. If I don't, self-compassion. But really making sure that I can do it in more condensed amount of time and at home.
Mm-hmm.
Like that that changed everything for
yes.
me. But I like also this idea of like, oh, 5 minutes here. I mean, not to be weird, but like, you know, I'm on the toilet. And so I could, you know, stretch or undulate or breathe or whatever. Like,
it's true.
Combining necessities with luxuries, you know. That may have been the weirdest thing I've ever said, but. But I'm sure there is a weird thing.
You're not alone.
But there is a funny thing about like a consistent motherhood experience is like finding solo time in the bathroom on the toilet.
It's so true, Allie.
I mean, you know, and then like the image of like little hands trying to get under the door.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's such a common
our door
experience of being
open.
A parent.
Our door doesn't even like close properly in our little rental.
So he's Aiden like pushing his little nose like a...
Well, he's very curious about potty training right now, so...
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's cool. What's the hardest thing about his age at 27 months right now?
For you? I won't lie. I think the poo-poo blowouts are really just really hard. They're really hard. But they're not. It's, you know, it's a minor problem to have.
Yeah,
they're really...
And it's just... It is just... Ugh.
It's just, you know, yeah. And it just, it's the natural way. So I think maybe little things, little minor things, if I had to find things are just, you know, I'd rather be playing with him than cutting up his food. I'd rather be, again, condensing, like how fast can I get something done so I can spend more time with him? And the getting something done is something for him, right? For the benefit of him, his laundry, his this or that, or shopping for things that he needs, you know, just packing all the stuff. There's a lot of stuff for newborns
so
and little
stuff.
Kids. There's a lot of stuff. So I'd say that would be the challenge. I mean, there is also this beautiful... The beauty of his wonder, like he hears an engine for the first time and he's like, oh my God, wow. Oh my God, mommy, you hear that? You know, he's so excited by those, all of the bird is chirp, 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 chirping, you know, like he's just so in this state of curiosity and awe. And on the flip side is him not quite being like, he's finally entered a stage of being able to communicate through words. However, he's not fully there, right? So there are things like I'd love to hear about his day at school. However, he cannot recap anything. He's like, gym. I ran around the gym. I played on the bike. And then he'll start telling random stories that make no sense and we don't think they're real. just say the name of a kid and I don't know. It's just a funny phase where he can't quite fully communicate.
Yes.
And yet
wants to so badly.
And yet we're so in love with the communication he is able to portray, you know?
Mm-hmm. And so what's the best thing about his age right now that you're loving? I mean, you're kind of combining them a little bit, but is there something like in particular that you're loving about
the sweet moments? Like I was holding him, putting him to bed recently. one night, and he just started like moving my chin, taking his little fingers and moving my chin. And this is in the dark, like I'm cuddling with him up on one shoulder, and he's taking his hand and moving my chin to different positions. I'm like, why is he doing that? You know? And then he just put it right in one position and lifted his face to mine and kissed me on the lips. And I was like, oh my God, you're the sweetest little angel. Like, he's just so precious.
Yeah.
And so tender and loving.
If you know, you had such a journey into this motherhood space. If you were to be speaking with, or, you know, just being with a woman who's going through something similar, what would you say to her? How would you support her? What would you offer her from your space of knowing and experience and intuition? Because you do have tremendous intuition.
Well, thank you, Ellie. That's kind. I think most importantly, because there are so many, it might depend on the stage that she's at or where she is in her process. But I think the most important message I would want to offer or relay would be to encourage her to trust that if she's meant to be a parent, it's going to happen. If to turn toward that truth within her that I believe we know. And if you really look inward and listen well, it will become clear and evident if it's a yes or a no, that you are meant to be parenting, be a mother. And the how will work itself out if you're paying attention. Like, pay attention to what isn't working, because there is a resistance there for a reason. So where is the resistance coming from? Is it outside of you? Is it within you? What, you know, what is all of that telling you? Listen to yourself. Find the pause. Take the pause to look within and have faith that if you're listening well, you will, the path will reveal itself.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that.
Yeah. I think that's very true. Deep, spirit and body listening. I'm on board.
Yeah.
Where does your faith come from? Was that something that you got growing up? Was it something you developed later?
I came in with it, I think. Ever since I was very little, I've always had this connection to something greater than myself. My practice from a very young age was to see God in everyone's eyes, to see, to see the likeness in one another, the oneness.
But that wasn't something that you learned. It was just,
I honestly, it's as far back as I can remember. And it didn't make sense to me then. It wasn't until I went to college that I, started to realize there's a lot of apathy and atheism and other stuff in the world. Like, I didn't see the diversity so much so until I was in that world of college where there was all this incredible diversity. I mean, I did grow up in a diverse neighborhood and school, and I did go to church, and I was a part of, I was Presbyterian, and I went to youth group and things like that. And, and always.
So you were given at least some structure around this idea of God or, you know, the divine.
Absolutely.
But then, but it manifested in you very naturally is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. It manifested as love. What always came back to me is my religion is love. It's the practice of love. It's being love. The more people that can connect to truly the essence of being love, that lands for me, that resonates for me. That's how I try to be in the world. Right. So, I mean, that's my experience with it. So yes, I definitely was influenced by the Holy Word. It definitely was influencing me and influenced my behavior, because that's a lot of what I speak to too, is a responsiveness versus reactiveness, right? So becoming responsible for our behavior and how we respond to things, is learned for me through that spiritual connection and practice.
So tell me about what you call spiritual realignment. What does that mean, and how do you support women on that path?
I work with women to help them come home to their self.
Me too.
I know. You too. You're one of my brilliant teachers. So yeah, I just help them to really remember that everything is within them. Everything is there. There's so much noise and so much residue that can get in the way and loosen the frequency, right? Mm. Or alter the frequency of that deep knowing. So it is cognitive and somatic work, conscious awareness leading to, okay, what is my responsibility within that? Once I have the knowledge, once I go within and I actually see the truth, there's an action required of me to, right? So because a lot of people go on a spiritual path and almost can zen out and move away from humanity, right? Like you become less human.
Is that what you call, and you know, I'm not, is that like spiritual bypassing?
Yes.
Would that be that? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
People call it that. Yes. And I agree with that, at that term for that. It's almost like they have to detach from humanity to be in the spiritual space. Right. And there's almost a,
right.
So I really love being human. We came into these bodies for a reason and a purpose. There's a reason why I chose this body and why, right. So that's one of my beliefs. And I try to really help use the embodiment work to inform and to clear. We have to clear the body to get clear, to get clarity. So we have to clear the muck and the noise and the residue or whatever it may be, to then be able to really hear and listen and pause and, ooh, okay, that's what's happening. And I actually do know what I have to do. And there's a choice point. Then you're at the choice point of, okay, am I going to do that? Or am I going to set that aside and not look at that quite right. yet until I'm ready? And no judgment. Like, everything is in divine time. And it is a practice. So it, you know, it's cognitive, it's somatic, it's processing old wounds, or old resistance or current challenges, or even working with women who are really very evolved on their path to sustain mm-hmm. in the practice and to continue their expansion and their infinite potential, right? So that's ideally where we're all moving toward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just sparked something that one of my teachers talks about, how, you know, yes, we learn to listen to our intuition, and just because we hear something in our intuition doesn't mean we have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the first step is just to listen.
Yes.
And I think you actually highlighted that by saying, like, learn to listen to the message and then make a choice. I'm either going to take action in that direction or I'm not. But at least we're listening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Agree.
Awesome.
I agree. Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your tremendous, you know, and very vulnerable story. So I really appreciate you being willing, because I find it so important to remember that nobody's path is the same, but we all end up in the same place.
Mm, yeah.
You know? So thank you for being willing.
Oh, Allie, thank you for having me. It's such an absolute pleasure and honor. And I just adore you. And this work is so comforting and needed. Thank you for doing it.
My pleasure. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Erin. For all the information about this episode, go to beingmompodcast.com to find photos of Erin and her family and the links for finding her online. In fact, Erin recently wrote a very beautiful Instagram post about presence in motherhood, which I will link for you in the show notes. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and take a moment to share your favorite episodes with your friends. I hope you have a beautiful week, and thank you so much for listening. Until next time.